Welcome to Manzanita Voices, the show for writers. If you love to write or love to read, this is the place for you. I'm your host, Linda Field, and I'm really happy to have you with us today. Our guest today will be Antoinette May. We'll meet her in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for the morning workout, where I read something written by you. It should be about 2 minutes long and can be poetry or prose. Since this is a morning show, I'd like the subject to be morning, like burning the coffee or spilling the toast. Did you get that? I'm just checking to see if you're paying attention. How about writing about oversleeping or undersleeping? A beautiful sunrise that you saw, or a phone call that woke you. There are so many things to write about that deal with morning, but I guess you folks must not be awake, though, because I don't have any submissions from you for this week. Come on, don't you want to hear your work read on the air? If you're shy, just tell me you want it to be anonymous. I won't give your name unless you want me to, and I'll make it even easier. It doesn't have to be about mourning. You can send something, anything that you think we might enjoy. Embed your work in an email so that I don't have to open any attachments. And send it to me at writers@kvgcradio.com. Think Voice of the Gold Country for the letters. Voice of the Gold Country, KVGC. Also, if you want to see what our publishing group is doing, go to www.manzapress.com, that's M-A-N-Z-A press.com, to learn all about Manzanita Writers. You know, Manzanita is a name that comes from a plant that grows here in the California foothills in the Gold Country. It's a beautiful, I guess it's a bush or a small tree with dark red bark, very smooth, and small pale olive green leaves. Very pretty plant, and you find it all over up here, and that's where we got the name for our group. Okay, well, I'm supposed to be reading something for the morning workout, and since I don't have anything from my listeners to read this week, I've chosen this poem from Wild Edges, Manzanita, Volume 6. It's our book that came out last year. And it does mention mourning. It's a very nice poem by William Keener called Boulders in the Sierra Meadow. And if you're not that familiar with Calaveras County or Amador County or the Sierra for that matter, you may not know that there are a lot of rocks here. I heard somebody call this God's own rock garden, and it really is. I can tell you that. There are rocks everywhere, beautiful ones too. So this is what William Keener had to say about boulders in a Sierra meadow. He finds them where the morning mist is lifting. Five, gathered like a small herd of alpine bison. Hides flecked with mica, veined with quartz. Opening his box of chalks, he begins the outlines of their stocky humps, working fast to capture them in a life drawing. Still asleep, forelegs tucked, muzzles deep among the skunk cabbage and grasses damp with last night's rain. He knows their habits, how all rocks are metamorphic, shifting their shapes throughout the day, shouldering gold as they lower massive granite heads to slowly graze away the blue shade beneath their feet, consuming it by noon. And when the dark succulence returns at evening's edge, nothing can deter their placid amble into mountain shadow, creatures fattened by rich, slanted light. William Keener, Boulders in a Sierra Meadow, and that's from Wild Edges, Manzanita Poems and Poetry, page 84. Okay, now we get to greet our guest, Antoinette May. Welcome, Antoinette.
Hello.
It's really nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, Antoinette and I met several years ago. when I first heard from Monica Rose about the Gold Rush Writers Conference here in the Sierra foothills, and it's held in a little town called McCullamy Hill. And Antoinette is the founder of this annual weekend workshop for writers. And Antoinette, why don't you tell us how this came to be and what it is?
Okay. Well, it's a gathering of every kind of writer. We have a number of workshops. We have awfully good speakers. It's an exciting exchange, a really high-energy gathering that we've been having for 6 years. Our seventh annual will be the first weekend in May of 2012. I hope somebody listening today will be there and come up and say where you heard about it.
Yeah, yes, I highly recommend it. When I first came about 4 years ago, I was just blown away by the quality of people who attend and the quality of people who give the workshops. And it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it's an opportunity to meet writers from all over who come to share their work and to learn their craft, talk about it, just kind of immerse themselves. And I remember my experience when I first came that first time. I came up a day early wanting to explore the Sierra countryside because I wasn't very familiar with this part of Highway 49. I was more familiar with the area over by Nevada City and Coloma, but the McCullamy Hill area and Calaveras County was kind of a stranger to me. So I came early, and I ended up getting way off on a remote road up in the high country, and it was a rainy afternoon, and I ended up having a flat tire, and it gave me a short story that ended up getting published in Wild Edges, my story Angels in the Rain, which now that I read it now I would like to edit it again. But it was just kind of a wonderful offshoot of my first time at Gold Rush Writers. Tell us a little bit about the people that you have who come as faculty for this workshop.
All of our faculty members have been outstanding. The whole conference is a wonderful networking opportunity and a great energy exchange. Our workshop leaders are all published writers, and they can give really right straight from the shoulder advice and direction. And so it's very exciting. I mean, the people, the attendees are also exciting and talented. So it's a great exchange. But our faculty, we've got a core group that have all published fairly prolifically. And then each time we have a headliner, we have had Karen Joy Fowler and Mary Mackey and Adair Lara. And Rob Swiger, just really fabulous people who have been very, very successful in the writing field. They're all published. They've done very well. Most of them have done several books, and so they can really give very good advice and suggestion, direction that we're all looking for on different levels.
Yes, I've always gotten a lot out of the workshops, and every year it seems to get better and better. I've had workshops with Helen Bonner on memoir. I had a workshop with Kathy Isaac Luke and Kevin Arnold.
Short stories with Kevin Arnold.
Yes.
He's a very prolific prize-winning short story writer. And then Kathy Isaac Luke is a poet, a published poet, and such a wonderful person to network with.
Yeah, she was a guest on this show, and I've heard rave reviews of the time when she was on. She reads her work beautifully.
Yeah.
She does. So how did you get the idea to form Gold Rush Writers?
Well, I moved up here from the Bay Area because I married a mountain man, and he kind of came down out of the mountains, and I came up into the foothills, and we compromised on McCallumy Hill, which just is such a cute setting, and the hotel there is so appealing and so historic, and I liked it so well, And McCallumy Hill has been lucky for me. I published my first novel in 2006 when I was living here. And it was in the publication stage while I was waiting for it to get out. I was so happy and euphoric. And I thought, well, it happened to me. It can happen to other people. Why don't I get together a group of other writers and we tell our stories and help each other. And so that's how it got started. And then it's just grown from then, and it gets bigger and bigger and better every year.
It does. It's grown by leaps and bounds. Even I can see that just attending for a few years. Our listeners will probably be used to hearing about this as the shows go on, because I will be mentioning it more and more, especially as we get closer to the next time for the workshop, which is always around...
Always the first weekend in May.
Yeah. And if you've never been to McCallumy Hill, it is on Highway 49 in the Gold Rush country. Very historic. The whole event takes place at the Leger Hotel, which has its own ghost and has wonderful history. And it's just a fabulous opportunity to familiarize yourself with the natural beauty up here. You could come for the Gold Rush Conference and stay on a couple of extra days and go to Big Trees, go to Markleyville, Bear Valley. Oh, so many wonderful things here. And we're not far from Lake Tahoe either. We're between Lake Tahoe and Yosemite, so I can't think of any better neighborhood than that. Okay, well, we'll be back in just a few minutes, and we're going to find out how Antoinette got into this whole business of writing and where this all came from in her life. So please stay tuned. All right, welcome back, folks. We're talking with Antoinette May. And Antoinette, I'd like to find out more about your life. How on earth did you get into writing? Because you're a very prolific writer, and you write so many different types of things.
Yes,
how did you get started?
Well, I had a mother who read to me, and that was an inspiration, I guess. And she was very encouraging to me, and so when I was four or five years old, before I could literally write, I used to dictate stories to her. And I used to say, I'm going to be a writer when I grow up. And no one laughed at me in my family. So I had good encouragement. And then when I was about 15, I began doing really what I'm doing right now, writing a weekly column for a local newspaper. And that really gave me my start. I wrote for the La Jolla Light, and about what kids were doing, a kind of teenage column, and I continued with that until I graduated, and then I ultimately became a reporter on the San Diego Union, which was very exciting, a metropolitan daily. My background is journalism. I ultimately became managing editor of a newspaper, not as large as the San Diego Union, but a substantial, nice paper. And did that for some time, did that for 20 years, and then had saved up a little bit of money and decided I was going to take a trip around the world. And I did that, and I had a leave of absence from my newspaper. And when I came back, it turned out that the newspaper had fallen on bad times and they were going out of business.
See, they couldn't get along without you.
Yeah, I guess that was it. I'd like to think that. Anyway, though, I was able to draw unemployment, and I thought, well, now I can either go hunting for a job right now, or I could. So many interesting things happened to me on this trip. Maybe I'll just live very conservatively and see if I how I could manage freelance writing. And I was really, really lucky. I was able to patch out that money for quite a while. And by the time my unemployment ran out, I had a book contract. So I was very, very lucky getting started in a freelance writing career. I had three really, it sounds almost biblical, I had three good years where it seemed like I could sell almost anything. And then I had three bad years. And since then, it's kind of rounded out.
Yeah, life does go in cycles
that.
It just really does. So what was the first book contract? What was that for?
It was a book called Haunted Ladies, and then it became, then it came out, it was published by Chronicle Books, and then later it went into paperback, and the paperback title was called Psychic Women.
Psychic Women.
It's now, it's out of print now, but I'm going to publish it as an e-book fairly soon. It was, it's a collective biography of six women who had, were psychic and had some very exciting experiences.
Oh my. Are you a psychic person?
Oh, I think everybody is.
Really?
But I, for a number of years, was kind of a psychic investigator, and I came in contact with some very, very gifted people who certainly were extremely psychic. I think to really call yourself a psychic, you have to be able to count on it more often than not. Everybody has flashes of insight, but some people can make a legitimate living with it because, let's say, 7 times out of 10, they're on target.
They're really tuned in somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, now you have another book called Haunted Houses of California.
Oh, yes, that was delightful to write. That was lots of fun. I had two wonderful psychics who worked with me. One of them is Sylvia Brown, who is very well known.
I've heard her on the radio, haven't I?
Yes. Sylvia is very gifted. And then another man who's now on the other side, Nick Nocerino. Nick, if you're out there, contact me.
I think I see him standing behind you right now.
Yes. A big guy with a Brooklyn accent.
Oh, my. That's great. So what are your other books? Well, let's see. Now, okay, you were a newspaper person, then you published this book, and you've written for magazines.
Yes, I've written a lot for magazines. My early books were about parapsychology because I was so interested in it. But then I did a lot of travel writing, and that led to writing a couple of guidebooks. In a sense, Haunted Houses of California is a kind of guidebook.
Yes, it is.
People could use that to go from one haunted house to another. Most of the ones I wrote about are open to the public.
I forget, is the Winchester Mystery House in there?
I do a signing every Halloween
at
the Winchester Mystery House.
Oh, you do? No kidding.
It's a fun place to visit.
My friends call me Mrs. Winchester because I have spent a great part of my life remodeling houses, but we won't go into that. But that is my other name, Mrs. Winchester. Let's see. So then you published a couple of biographies.
Yes,
and you're working on another one.
Yeah,
I know.
Well, I'm working now on a novel that's a fictionalized biography of Mary Shelley, the woman who created Frankenstein. Who wrote Frankenstein.
And I know since I'm in we're in the same writers group, so just about every meeting you come and you bring a new chapter, and we are going through that book with you.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. It's just fabulous. And she was a very interesting person.
Very interesting person.
Yeah. Why did you get interested in Mary Shelley?
Oh, I like scary stories. I like the story of Frankenstein. You can enjoy Frankenstein on a number of levels. It's a good scary story, but then it's also about alienation, and I think everyone at some time in their life feels alienated from life or from close friends.
And so she wrote that because she was
I think because of her childhood and alienation from her father. And her life was so really very, very interesting. Her mother who had died at her birth, was really one of the very first feminists, Mary Wollstonecraft, and she really started feminism in motion. But Mary never had an opportunity to know her mother, but she grew up hearing about her, and I think she felt on some level that she had been deserted by her mother when she was born.
Mm-hmm.
And then her father, William Godwin, was a philosopher and a writer and a successful man, but very absorbed in his work, and so he didn't pay a great deal of attention to Mary. He was really trying to make a living for his family, and again, he was self-absorbed. So I think she was lonely.
She had a very lonely childhood. And then his father married a woman who became the wicked stepmother, and had a daughter who became the wicked stepsister. So Mary had a tough time.
Yeah, she really did. But she also had a very interesting time. She married first eloped with the poet Shelley. And then their very close friend was Byron, and they had a kind of an amazing life when they were so young.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what's so remarkable is Mary Shelley was only 16 when she began writing Frankenstein, and that's a book that has influenced literature for 200 years, more than 200 years.
And I, when I was younger, I never knew that Frankenstein was created by a woman, and I'll bet there are a lot of people out there who don't know that.
Yeah.
You like to write biographies about people and about women.
Yes,
precisely.
Women.
So your other two are very interesting. I've read those, and the first one that I read was Pilate's Wife, about Pontius Pilate in the time of Christ, and what sort of lady his wife was. That was a good story.
Well, yes, I really had to make her up, really. I knew there's so little, actually not very much is known about Pontius Pilate himself, but there's even less known about his wife. We know from the Gospel of Mark that her name was Claudia, and the fact that her name was Claudia is a very clear indication that she came from an upper-tier family, because to be named Claudia means that she was part of the Claudian dynasty. So I knew that much. And then I could think about Pilate and speculate about him. He wasn't known before, and he wasn't known after, so I think probably that was his first, being the governor of Judea, was his first assignment, and he was there for 10 years and left kind of under a cloud and wasn't assigned to anything else. So
he just kind of disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Probably they went to Gaul, and there's a tradition that they went to Gaul, and that Pilate ultimately became a Christian. Of course, we'll never really know. But
that's an interesting thought.
Yes,
it is
fun to speculate on.
Yeah, I like that thought.
But she just intrigued me when I heard her name, and I knew I heard a sermon on just right before Easter, and the minister was talking about really focusing on Pontius Pilate and how all of us in some situation or another wash our hands of it rather than dealing with it. And it was an interesting sermon, but there was a mention of this woman, and I thought, what must it have been like for her to come from kind of a la-di-da, a Roman family, and be exiled to Judea, which from a Roman standpoint would really be a backwater, and must her life have been like, and what would it have been like to have had this dream about Jesus and then try to save him and not be able to. And I don't know, it just made me, and I was very interested in the first century Rome. My book is not really a religious novel in the traditional sense, but it's about the roots of Christianity and what was going on in the first century, which was very exciting.
Yes, and your descriptions of the clothing the people wore, the meals that they ate, the buildings that surrounded them, all very interesting descriptions that brought it alive for me.
Well, I was awfully lucky. I was living in Palo Alto when I was working on that book, and I had the opportunity to take classes at Stanford, and I had absolutely wonderful teachers. And then at the same time, I was working as a travel writer, and I was able to visit so many of the places that I would that I wrote about. And so I was really lucky. It's kind of like a setup, I think.
Maybe you were supposed to write the book.
Maybe.
Okay, well, we'll be back very soon, and we'll hear about your other book, The Sacred Well. So, folks, stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're back with Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field. And today we're talking with Antoinette May. We'll be with her in just a moment, but first I want to remind you about my email address where you can contact me and send short poetry or prose, 2 minutes long, that I might possibly read on the air for Morning Workout. We'd love to hear from you and put some of your work on the air. And you can be anonymous. Just tell me if you don't want me to use your name. Also, there's the manzapress.com, which is the website for the Manzanita Writers Press, where you can learn about the members of our group and what we're doing, functions that are coming up. There are often readings and book sales going around the area, and we'd love to have you come and meet us and talk with us. And also join our writers group, Writers Unlimited, which meets in San Andreas on the second and fourth Monday of every month. We meet in the Arts Council building on Main Street in San Andreas. You park in the back behind the building and come in through the rear entrance. And let's see, what else do I need to tell everybody? The Calaveras County Arts Council. We need you to support them because they support us. They support Manzanita Writers Press, they support Writers Unlimited, and they do wonderful things for all of the artistic people in Calaveras County. They're a wonderful resource, and they enrich the lives of the people in this county so much. So please give your thanks to the Calaveras County Arts Council. Okay, we're back with Antoinette. And Antoinette, I know that you have you've said that you have a love affair with the Yucatan Peninsula and with Mexico. Tell us about that.
Well, I love Mexico. I've been going there for years and years and years. I grew up in Southern California, so I was kind of close to it. But then I had the opportunity to go to Yucatan on the East Coast, and I just was overwhelmed by the mystique of it, the Mayan ruins and the history there. And after I went there a number of times as a travel writer, I had a commission to write a guidebook to Mexico, Mexico for Lovers, and then ultimately Yucatan, A Guide to the Land of Maya Mysteries. And both of those books are kind of love letters to Mexico, really, because I feel very positively about that country, and most particularly Yucatan. It's very magical. The ruins are almost overwhelming. It's wonderful to walk in the jungle there and all that. But anyway, out of those experiences, when I was writing about the history of Yucatan, I learned about this very interesting American journalist whose name was Alma Reed, and she went down to Mexico with a group of archaeologists to excavate the ruins at Chichen Itza in the 1920s, and met and fell in love with the governor of Mexico, who commissioned a very, very beautiful love song for her that's still being sung by mariachis. It's gorgeous.
What's it called?
La Peregrina.
Meaning the
Pilgrim.
The Pilgrim.
Yeah. And that's how he saw her, that she was a pilgrim coming through his country and who would go away. Well, they fell very much in love and were going to be married, and then he was shot by a firing squad. This was right after the revolution, and he was a revolutionary governor, and the landowners didn't like him very well, and they got him. Well, when I heard that story, I thought, that can't be a real story. That sounds like an opera. It didn't
yes,
seem
it
real,
does.
But then I began doing some research and discovered it all was absolutely true. It really happened, and I was really walking in Alma Reed's footsteps. And so I decided to write a biography of her life, which was really fascinating, that her romance with the governor of Yucatan is only one part of it, that she went on with another group of archaeologists and excavated Carthage, and she had a fabulous art gallery in New York. Her whole life is very exciting. But I wrote that. Either I wasn't through with Alma or she wasn't through with me. I couldn't get her story out of my mind. And so I ended up writing a novel, The Sacred Well, which is part of it. It's about two women, Alma Reed and a contemporary woman. And the Alma Reed part is absolutely true.
And the contemporary woman, is that you?
Well, only in the sense that I'm a travel writer.
And the contemporary woman in the book is a travel writer. She finds out about Alma Reed.
Oh, yes, and she has a very exciting life, which I wish all of that were true in my case. But if it didn't happen to me, it happened to people that I knew that were other travel writers. I think it's true to the experience.
That's the wonderful thing about writing a book. You can, if you want something to be true, you can make it so.
You can make it true, yes.
Uh-huh.
And it's certainly true. The possibilities are all there in that fabulous country.
Yeah. So, Alma went to New York and she had the art gallery, and did she finish her life there?
No, she didn't. She ultimately returned to Mexico when she was 60 years old. She went back to Mexico and got a job writing for the Mexico City News, and she continued to write for the next 17 years of her life. And she died when she was 77, and on her way to the hospital to have what she thought would be a minor operation, she dropped a column off at the newspaper and then went on to the hospital and had the operation and didn't wake up from it. But that seems like a pretty good end to me. She was working right up to the end of her life and leading a very, very active life in Mexico City.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. She was a San Francisco lady, and her family are still, survivors of her family are still around.
And you've talked with
her? Oh, yes. Uh-huh. When I was writing the biography, I did talk to her nieces, who had very vivid memories of her.
Huh.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
It was interesting to write,
too.
And I think, of course, travel writing is a marvelous occupation because you have an opportunity to often go so many places that you might not be able to go otherwise. The fact, if you have an outlet with a newspaper, it makes you popular with governments. I myself have been invited by the Mexican government to Mexico many times, and it was only because I was writing stories. I felt it was a bit like being Scheherazade. I had to keep writing and writing and writing, telling and telling and telling, but it made it possible for me to go many places.
And it opened a lot of doors for
Absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, no question about it.
I'm actually pretty envious here because I was a flight attendant for over 30 years, mm-hmm. and I became a flight attendant because I wanted to go to all these wonderful places and have all these wonderful experiences. But it's different as a flight attendant when you're in a place for 24 hours and you're exhausted when you get there and you know you have to rest up because you have an exhausting trip going home, and you do it once a week. It's quite different than being a travel writer and going to live in a place and have doors open to you to meet government people
yeah.
and other people in the cities and countries
yeah,
who want to give you a view of their world.
Oh yes, they want to make sure you're going to have a good time too. They have press trips where they invite people, writers, and wine and dine them. There's no question about it. It's a great experience.
That's right. Of course, they show you exactly what they want to show
yes.
you and what
uh-huh.
they want you to see.
Yeah, they do, but you get free time.
And
yes,
have you ever?
They certainly do show their best side. There's no question about it. But
yeah.
but then you,
as we all do.
Yeah.
I mean, even on a blind date, people show their best
That's
sides.
Right. Yeah.
So, did you ever go off the beaten path and do some investigative stuff that ended up being articles or stories that?
Oh yes. I went so many times to Mexico, and when I started working on my guidebook, I couldn't be limited to just the places that where we went on press trips. I had to go around on my own, and I wanted to. The press trips were an entree, but I spent so much time in Mexico. I really felt for a while that I knew it like the back of my hand.
I bet you did. Now, when is the last time you were there?
Oh, it's a little over a year ago.
Too long.
A little over a year ago.
Where did you go?
Yucatan.
Silly question.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite place to stay there?
No, I like to stay at the Mayaland Hotel. Or the Hacienda Hotel that are right on the ruins at Chichen Itza.
Oh, you wrote about them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would recommend that to anyone. The Hacienda, if you can get in, it's so little. It was the home of the original consul general, the original American consul in Yucatan, and he was the one who discovered the treasure in the sacred well of Chichen Itza, and that was his home, and he was then the host of these archaeologists who came down, and they built little cottages for the archaeologists, and they still exist, and it looks a bit like a travel lodge or a motel or something,
uh-huh.
with little cottages, and then this one big room, hacienda, which really is mainly the common rooms of the hotel and the dining room. It's lots of fun to stay there. If you can get in, it's small. But then next to it is the Mayaland Hotel, which was built in the 1930s, and that's kind of fun, too.
Uh-huh. You made them both very real to me when I read the book, and I do recommend the book very highly, The Sacred Well by Antoinette May. We're going to come back after a short break, and Antoinette's going to tell us a little bit about the publication of that book and how she feels about the cover design. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field. I'm your host, and we're visiting today with Antoinette May. Antoinette, we were just talking about your book, The Sacred Well, which I found to be very interesting. Tell us a little bit about the publication of that book and the cover design. I remember you told me once that you were a little disappointed in the cover and also the naming process of your other book, Pilot's Wife. When a person has a book published, you're lucky you've had publishers publish your book.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly I've been talking on this program over the last few months with writers who are self-publishing. You have gone the other route, and you don't always have the freedom that self-publishers have.
No, you don't. If somebody else is paying for the ink, they get the final say-so. And
yes.
In my case, it was HarperCollins. And I was thrilled to
yes.
have HarperCollins buy my two novels. I felt very, very fortunate. And I liked my editors, and I found them nice people to work with. I wasn't thrilled with the cover for Sacred Well. There's a very inviting looking woman on the cover who isn't part of the story. She's no character in the story, but I think they thought that that would sell books. And
that's right.
And well, what can you do? I suggested other covers, and they, but they didn't really work out.
Yes, this young woman lying on the lying on her side on the cover does not exactly look like she is going to be going on an archaeological dig.
No, she certainly doesn't, and it's pretty unrealistic too, because really no one lies down in the jungle; they'd be eaten alive by all those insects.
Yeah, she's got this beautiful pyramid in the background, and I know I wouldn't lie down in the jungle there for sure. I have seen, I've been lucky enough to be at your home a few times, and I've seen the different covers of Pilate's Wife as it has been published around the world.
Yeah.
You have so many different
translations, and each country has their own cover.
Cover
and that's
design.
So much fun to see.
And they've given the book different names.
Yes,
and,
uh-huh. Yeah. I like the UK one, Claudia, Daughter of Rome. I like that name. I like that better than Pilate's Wife.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a lot more than somebody's wife.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. What advice do you have for writers, people who are wanting to get some words down on paper and go somewhere with it?
Well, two things. And the first one is get involved with a writing group. Find other people that are writing. Try to find people that are as much as possible on your own level or maybe a little bit farther along. But find other people that are really serious about their writing, and critique each other's work. Get together on a regular basis. If nothing else, it will give you a deadline. If you know that you're going to be meeting every other week with a group of people, then you have a deadline. And I think that's probably very important in the beginning. I've just been doing it so long, I get up first thing in the morning and go write, and it's like brushing my teeth. So, but I think new writers are maybe a little more hesitant about it, and you can always find something else that needs to be done. And
oh yeah.
So if you have a deadline, that's very good, and the writing group will give you that. But also, we're so close to our own work, we know it in many forms, and we can think something is very clear and it isn't clear at all, and the other people in the group will be very quick to point out, I don't get it. Or maybe they'll say, you've said that again, how many times are you going to say that? And you want them to be very frank. You also want to feel that they're sincere and wanting to be helpful in their criticism, but you really, most of all, you want honesty. And I think that's extremely helpful. I think setting deadlines for yourself, being in a writing group, is very, very helpful. And then I think trying to get exposure. We live in an area where newspapers are trying very hard to engage readers, and there are opportunities to publish in newspapers. Both the Bee and the Chronicle have columns where people write about their write experiences with their pets or experiences with their children. Well, that's really very good exposure. And then here in the foothills, I think that the newspapers, the Lodestar, the paper that I write for, is very welcoming to anyone who comes in with a column idea, for instance. So think about the things that you're really interested in. If you're a nonfiction writer, think about your pets or your garden or your cooking or the things that you're really interested in, and write an article or a prospective column if you've got lots of ideas on that subject, about 1,000 words probably. Well, somewhere between 500 and 1,000 words, and take it in and show it to the editor, and keep pestering them. Their editors are busy people, but they're also looking for new ideas.
That's good advice. I always think of editors and newspaper people as being very busy and always on deadline, and you can't talk to them. But there are down times, and I'm sure they are looking for new ideas and new directions and ways to keep their readers interested.
Yeah, they really are. They really are. And then look for those columns, those spaces in the big papers where people can send in their stories. I think it's the Chronicle that has really engaging pet stories and all the time. And the Bee has something that you can contribute to. And that's exposure. It's experience. That's really very helpful. That's how I got started, really, was writing for a small paper and getting used to seeing my name in print was a nice feeling.
Yeah, but it was a thrill the first few times.
Tremendous thrill.
Tremendous.
Yes. Of course.
Another good way to get experience and get exposure and have deadlines and everything is to get involved with people who put on readings at various places.
Yeah.
Kathy Boyd Filler is one here, and also Monica Rose, of course, our Writers Unlimited group. We put on readings at various places. It could be Barnes & Noble in Stockton, or it could be a library. It could be in a park somewhere or at a winery. But find people who like to write and who have some pieces that are enjoyable to listen to, get them together and find a place to hold a reading and invite people to come and listen.
Yeah, it seems like there's always something good going on at Clark's Corners in Ione. They meet on a pretty regular basis, and that's a good place to network and get exposure, have an opportunity to read and meet other writers. And I think Kathy Fallor has several groups going, and involved in that. Go to Clark's Corner and read the bulletin board and see what's going on.
Yes, it's a wonderful happening place in this little town of Ione. And Zoe Keithley in Sacramento has 4 readings a year at Luna's Cafe on 16th Street, just inside of the Capitol building, and I've read there with her group for several years, and it's always a neat experience. And Art Luna is such a wonderful man. He opens his little cafe to us and gives us an evening to entertain people with the written word, and it's just great. And you hear wonderful stories, wonderful writing. What other advice do you have for people who are publishing? You submitted your work to an agent.
Yes.
And you were very fortunate. Well, your work is very good. So.
Yeah, I was fortunate, though. I'd published a lot of nonfiction, but it's hard to go from nonfiction to fiction. I really had a lot of problems and various setbacks. I had an editor at Tor House, a publishing company in New York, who was all excited about what became Pilot's Wife and was ready to go with it. And on Friday afternoon, she said over the telephone, "I'm going to take this in. I'm going to make you an offer on this, but I need to talk to the people in the business office." And she died over the weekend.
Oh.
A young woman in her 20s.
Oh, imagine. My.
And then no one could find the manuscript, and no one knew anything about it. And, of course, the poor woman had died so suddenly. She had all these books in progress that other editors had to pick up and continue with that. So my book absolutely got lost in the shuffle. That was my first big coming close to it. And then I interested an editor at Harper San Francisco, and she wanted many, many, many changes in it. And I knew she was right, but they were big changes. And I thought, I had just gotten married, just moved up here, and I was in the course of writing what was the first draft of Sacred Well. And I thought, I just can't address this right now. So I put it aside, and finished Sacred Well, and then picked it up again and thought, okay, I'm going to go with this. And
picked
I called,
up, no, we're talking
I,
about Pilot's
then
Wife?
I picked up, yeah, Pilot's Wife, and started working on it again. I'd done just the first draft of Sacred Well, and so then I went back to Pilot's Wife, which I thought was completed, but was needed a lot of work, and I looked at all her suggestions, and I thought, yes, she's really right. And I called her and I said, I'm going to do this, and will you take a I know some time has passed, but will you take a look at it? And she said, oh yes, I believe in that book.
Great.
Go ahead. So I sat down and I worked on it for about 6 months, and I addressed all those things, and I called her and I said, Renee, are you still interested? I'd like to send this. And she said, yes. So I did, and about a week later she called me and said, I really like this, and I want to show it around to the rest of the people and the publishing house, and I'll be back to you in a week.
Oh, my. There we are again.
A week passed, and I didn't hear anything from her, and I called, and I found that she had been fired.
Oh, my
goodness.
She was the
senior editor at Harper, San Francisco.
Oh, my
goodness.
She'd
been fired. That was just the most awful blow. But then I was doing all this on my own without an agent. Then I was very fortunate in connecting with a great agent, Irene Webb, who got interested in me, and I think she suggested some changes, which I made, and then that was in July, and by September 6th, I think, really, just right at this time, I got an email from her saying, I have an offer for it from Dutton, and I was thrilled, but I wasn't satisfied with the offer. I mean, I'll tell you what it was, because it showed, this happened to me, it can happen to
That's right.
Your,
That's,
yeah,
this is good to hear.
Yeah. Okay, they were offering $38,000. I just didn't feel comfortable about that. I'd put years in working on the darn book, and so I said, "No, it's got to be more than that." And within a day, she got it up to $100,000, which
oh
is,
my,
you know, really thrilling for a first novel.
That is thrilling. How
that remarkable woman did that.
Yeah.
So it can happen. It happened to me. It can happen to anyone else. I think one thing, though, that I did that I would like to make, it's a suggestion I hadn't thought of earlier. I think what got Irene interested in me was I had a really good website, which my husband had created for me. And it showed the different things that I had done. And there are a lot of things that you can put up there. I was able to show a body of nonfiction work, and at least she could see that I was writing.
Yes.
But I think anyone can create something that's at least engaging. And that's why it is important to do some of these smaller things, like writing about your pet to the Bee or your garden to the Chronicle. And
that's right. They're all steps in the
path.
All
steps
that lead to the top of the mountain.
Yeah. And I think you can have pictures of yourself. You can have, you can do whatever you want. You can have pictures of yourself working at your office.
Yes. You can write a little blog.
Yes. Yes.
And
absolutely.
Yeah. Very important.
Yeah.
Those are the things I've been told, and I have a website, but I haven't even developed it yet. I'm working on those
really
things.
It's important to do that. The blogs are getting very important now. This was 5 years ago, so a little bit before blogs really.
So
the website sold.
People can go to your website. Let's finish up by telling them what your website is and how they can go there.
Oh, it's AntoinetteMay.com. Antoinette is AntoinetteMay, May.
May.com.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Go there. You'll enjoy it. You'll learn a lot more about Antoinette, the things that she has done, and maybe help to set a path for yourselves. It's been wonderful having you with us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please don't forget to send me an email. Let me know what you thought about it, and look for us again next week at Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field. Have a nice week.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council. Thank you.